Welcome to How to Money. I'm Joel.
And I'm Matt.
And today we're discussing using credit cards for $50,000 in free travel with Brad Barrett.
Yeah, Joel, I'm really excited that we've got Brad joining us on the show today. Brad Barrett, he is co-host of the popular podcast Choose Fi. He is a CPA who left his job thanks to his pursuit of financial independence, so he obviously knows a thing or two about personal finance. However, Brad's favorite topic is leveraging credit card rewards to save more money and take trips you never would have dreamed possible for just pennies on the dollar. He's been able to score more than $50,000 in free travel thanks to credit card rewards. So Brad, thanks for coming on the show, man.
Hey guys, I am glad to be here. This should be a lot of fun.
It most definitely will be a lot of fun, Brad. And we're so glad to have you on the show, man. Every week on the show, Matt and I drink a craft beer, and we do that intentionally. It's kind of the splurge that we are more than happy to partake in, spend a little bit more money on beer because we prioritize drinking fine beer. So the first question we have for everyone and the first question we have for you today is, what's your splurge? Like, what's your craft beer equivalent?
Yeah, that's a great question. I love the sentiment behind that because, yeah, that's what we talk about at Chooseify all the time, which is we set up a life that just doesn't cost that much framework-wise, but then you can spend lavishly on the things that you do value. So, yeah, I'm all about this. So for me, it is, I guess, fitness. And I guess specifically now, CrossFit is actually something I joined about a year and a half ago. And that is not cheap if you guys have ever looked it up. So while I could probably work out for free just in my house doing pull-ups and push-ups and things like that, I just love the camaraderie and the challenge of CrossFit, frankly. So even though it's expensive, it's a splurge that I am very, very pleased with.
Nice. Very cool. How much does that run? I guess there's a monthly membership, if you don't mind me asking.
No, I don't mind at all, actually. So I kind of found my little Fi hack, actually, of how to do it for a little bit less, which is just kind of how I approach life. I'm always looking for like that little way to optimize. So whereas I could have a monthly membership, but that would just kind of eat me up as like I travel a little bit, and like my family, we just got back from a big long trip to Hawaii, and to spend $150 a month on a membership, it would destroy me, like mentally, you know, kind of jokingly here, guys, but like to spend $150 when I'm not using the thing. So what I actually did was I bought a class punch card. So essentially every time I go, they just kind of knock off one of my cards in, you know, in the computer system. But what I did was, because FI is about value and it's about trying to extract the most value, and also not about having to worry about cash flow, right? Like that's the beautiful thing about being in a strong financial position, is that you can really approach things and try to maximize. So I think I was the first person in the history of the gym to buy like the biggest punch card they offered. I think it was like a joke, but like I think it was like 100 classes for like $1,200 or something like that. So
wow.
Like I laid out, you know, that kind of money at once, but actually I did the math. And even if I went the number of times per week that the membership was, it would still be less for me. And now I don't have to pay for all these missed classes. So, you know, kind of a funny story, but like it really illustrates how I approach life, I guess.
Yeah, no doubt, man. And I think the first time I ever heard about CrossFit, I was like, oh my gosh, people spend that much money to work out. But the more and more I get into understanding the things that make me tick and the things that I enjoy, the more I understand that someone's willing to spend a little bit more money to join a gym that's actually going to get them to work out, as opposed to having the $30 or $40 gym membership that they don't even use, right?
Yeah.
So we want to ask you about credit cards in a few minutes, Brad. You've got a lot of wisdom to share with us there. But first, let's kind of talk about the concept of FIRE. You've already launched into it just a little bit now, and it stands for Financial Independence Retire Early. A lot of our listeners are already kind of familiar with that concept, but your podcast, Choose FI, is dedicated to this idea of becoming financially independent at an earlier age. And so we talk about that here on the show a lot, but can you share with our listeners what that concept of FIRE or financial independence really means to you and why you've gravitated towards it in such a big way?
Yeah. And I'm glad you had the distinction there between financially independent and FIRE. I think FIRE is this really kind of cute acronym. You know, it just has this certain panache to it, right? But I think the retire early, people get lost in that because it's like, I don't know, there's too many negative connotations about retiring and kind of being unproductive. And I don't view FI that way at all. I mean, to me, it's about running towards something that I'm passionate about, not running away from something that I despise. Like, so I think that that mental reframe is something crucially important. And for me, FI is about gaining power and autonomy over your life, right? So many people go to work, they live paycheck to paycheck because frankly, they don't know any better, right? Like it's not that they're trying to do something terrible or destroy their lives. But they didn't like me. I didn't learn anything from my parents financially. There was no class in high school. And, you know, I got pretty lucky that I came across a couple of pieces of information that changed my life for the better. But many people don't. And, you know, they're living that hamster wheel existence, right? The 9 to 5 or worse, and really just kind of making themselves feel better by buying fancy things. And then the sad part about it is then they're locked in. Right? They're locked in because in order to buy and pay for those things, they have to work, right? So these fancy cars and houses sit idle all the time and you just can't enjoy it. So for me, financial independence is about creating that space and taking a step back, maybe for the first time in your entire life and saying, all right, this standard path, this paycheck to paycheck, maybe I can retire at 70 if I'm lucky. That doesn't have to be the only way. Maybe I can figure out what do I want out of my life, right? Like if I get 8 or 9 decades on this planet, that's a pretty long life. And in order to waste it, guys, just waste it in a 9 to 5 job that doesn't light me up. I don't really understand that at its core. So I guess in essence, I would say, financial independence and saving money, which is really at the heart of it, right? It's not being a miser. Mm-hmm. It's not depriving yourself. It's saving money for the ultimate luxury, which is buying back decades of your life. So when you reframe it from saving money as deprivation, from, oh, I wish I could buy all these trinkets and gadgets, to, okay, I'm saving for the purpose of gaining my life back. That is such an obvious choice to me.
Man, that's so amazing. And Brad, one of the things you just said is the fact that you're running towards something versus away. I think that's such a fantastic distinction between the difference of how you guys view FI and how other folks might view retirement, right? You know, you've got experience with FI because you retired at the age of 35, but what are some decisions that you made that you feel had the biggest impact in helping you to achieve that?
Yeah, so that is really a great question. And I think it's really important, if you don't mind, guys, that I just take a second and say that FI, at least the way that we look at it, is very personal. Okay, so just because I made some decisions doesn't mean that's the right path. It doesn't mean it's the prescribed path. There's no dogma. There's no, you have to do X, Y, and Z to be a card-carrying member of the FI community. It's nothing like that. It's life is a series of choices. And if you're living paycheck to paycheck or you're getting into debt every month, even worse, right? You know you have to make some decisions to ever retire, to ever have any money, right? So I personally don't care what decisions each individual person makes, but I do care that they get up off the couch and take action. I think that is the crucial piece that is missing, right? Like they can listen to your podcast, they can listen to my podcast, they can read every blog in the world, but unless they get up off the couch and take action, it is all worthless. So, you know, this is very, very personal, but obviously since you asked about me and I'm the guest on your podcast, I will tell you some of my decisions were, I guess, fairly radical, though we did not think it at the time, nor do we ever kind of conceptualize it that way. But I guess my wife and I, we got married. So we grew up on Long Island, New York, which suburb of New York City, and that was all we knew. We lived there our whole lives. It's an extraordinarily expensive place to live. And for whatever reason, when we got married at 25, 26, this was far predating any of the FI blogs or anything like that. We had no concept of FI, but we just had a sense that that wasn't the life that we were looking for. We knew we would always have to give something up, even though we were both CPAs, albeit at that point we're just beginning associates, right? We're not making a ton of money by any means, but there was possibility for making some money down the road. But we just knew we would always have to give something up. And for us, that really meant Laura staying home with our future, at that point, fictional kids, right? This was before the kids came around, but it was a thought in our minds. And at that point, we said, all right, I mean, as much as we love Long Island, and this is where we've grown up, our family and friends are here, in order to make a better future for ourselves, we need to move. And what was in this odd quirk of fate, I actually went to the University of Richmond for undergrad, but moved back home afterwards. And after I went to work for one of the big firms, I went to work for a private company, and they only had tax personnel in two places. It was this weird serendipity. It's Long Island and Richmond. So I actually asked if I could transfer down to the Richmond office, and they were thrilled with that. It was great. Like, the VP was down here, so he was doing backflips. It was great, right? And we got to live for a third of the price of what we were living on in New York. So that was a huge, huge one. I think, you know, just kind of, I said this before, but setting up a framework of a life that just simply doesn't cost that much. So we bought like a nice house, but not a very expensive house at all. We drive old cars. I haven't had a car payment in 10 plus years. I bought my car 15 years ago, and it was 16, actually 16, almost to the day. and you know, we don't spend a ton of money on food, not because we eat rice and beans, but because my wife has kind of come up with a system to save money on cooking gourmet meals at home. So again, when you set up a framework of a life that doesn't cost that much, you can then spend on things that you want, like travel, which we're going to talk about, CrossFit, like I mentioned. You know, you don't have to worry about the pennies when you have the items that take up 50 to 60, 70% of your budget, when you have those locked down.
Yeah, that's so true, man. Yeah, the big things, when you take care of those and you handle those things well, the smaller things, so it's something like buying that $1,200 CrossFit annual membership sort of thing, it's just not nearly as big of a deal as it is for most folks who are have a big mortgage that they can barely afford, a new car payment, stuff like that. Brad, I so appreciate your intentionality, and you just touched on that. And you even talked about being intentional before you had kids. So I want to know, what changed as you and your wife were working towards financial independence once you had kids? Did your goals change after becoming a dad? And what did that pursuit of financial independence look like when your kids came on the scene?
Yeah, Joe, that's a really good one. So, I mean, I can't say that we ever, like, once my older daughter Anna was born, that Laura and I ever sat down and said, all right, things are changing now. You know, we have a kid. What are we going to do now? Like, it was less intentional. I wish, thank you for giving me credit, but I think we had this path, and at our core, we've always been on this path, and we've always seen the goal. And the end goal is, I guess, ultimately having financial independence. But really, along the way, it was Laura staying at home with the kids, right? And we were able to do that. So when we set up this entire, like I said, this framework of a life, we set it up knowing that Laura was going to stop working. So we had a significant savings rate with both of us working, obviously. But even when she stopped working, and this was part of the plan, was we still had a fairly significant savings rate. Not that I was making a ton of money. Guys, I don't think my base salary, I don't think it was ever over 100,000. So like, we're not talking about like a vice president of a tax department or anything. I mean, I was a low to mid-level manager at a big baking company, right? So like, we're not talking like light the world on fire, partner at Ernst & Young type thing, right? So it was just about being intentional about, all right, this is what we know or predict that our lives are going to look like when kids come around. Can we do this? And can we still save money? Because saving money was essential to us, because we knew that was what would get us there. And now, frankly, guys, like, I never envisioned when I was 25 that I would be owning a number of websites that talked about travel rewards and having this podcast that's getting, you know, crazy downloads and people all across the world. Like, that was so foreign to me. So, you know, obviously owning your own businesses, that's helped some. But at our fundamental essence, we haven't changed our spending habits. And I think it always comes back to value for us. So honestly, like, we don't budget. I know a lot of people do, and I fully respect that. But like, I've never understood budgeting because I don't have to, I don't think in that manner. It's, I spend on what I value, and that's just the simple fact of the matter, right? So like, I'm not worried about the cash flow of that month, or if I'm budgeting to save 40% and I still have some money left over, now I can go and spend it. No, like, it just naturally goes in the bank for me. So, and I'd love, actually, if you don't mind turning it around on you guys, I'd love to hear what your thoughts are on budgeting, if you don't mind.
Yeah. So when it comes to budgeting, for me, I was very similar to you, Brad, for the longest time. When
Brad,
single.
You're cut from the same cloth as Joel, that's for sure.
I didn't need a budget when I was single. My natural tendency was just to save more, put more into my 401k or IRA, and to put more into my savings account to save up for a rental property, whatever. And then when I got married, budgeting for me kind of became this necessity to be able to communicate about money well with my wife. So we have to put the numbers down on paper, and we have to be able to talk about it, because my frugal nature, I think, was kind of cramping my wife's style, really, in a big way. So we had to kind of get that stuff down so we could communicate about money well. But I completely understand that if it was just me, I could get away with not budgeting and be totally fine.
Yeah. And I've always been all about the numbers. I think it's really fascinating, Brad, that, I mean, you're a CPA. And so you deal with the minutiae, right? Like the details of the numbers. And it's interesting that, you know, you don't see yourself, I guess, being drawn towards that personally. But sort of like what Joel said and alluded to is, you know, what that budget was able to allow him and his wife. I saw that from the beginning for myself, even just personally, right? Even when I was single, I saw that this is a way for me to discipline my money, essentially, right? We're talking about CrossFit, and, you know, putting those numbers down within that spreadsheet was the equivalent maybe of you showing up and working out with these other guys and girls. You're kind of spurring each other on. And when there's accountability like that, I found that I was able to do much more with my money. So Brad, though, real quick, I want to reframe that previous question about kids. You and your wife discovered financial independence, you know, how that was a goal for you to strive after before you had kids. And for a lot of folks, they want to make sure that they achieve financial independence, or at least they have their finances in a healthy place. That way, when the kids do come on the scene, it's a big goal of theirs to be able to spend as much time with their kids, to have that flexibility. A lot of folks just don't want to make some of those sacrifices once kids are on the scene. But what would you say to folks who have not discovered financial independence yet, but they do already have kids? I mean, I'm seeing this for myself, because there's always a balance that I am personally trying to strive to maintain between being the sort of father and the kind of husband that I want to be to my family, while at the same time trying to achieve some of these more lofty financial goals, you know, investment properties, or ultimately financial independence. So yeah, what are your thoughts on balance?
So I guess quick question right back to you is, do you think that in order to achieve, I guess, those lofty goals as you're describing it, like, does that take significant time? Like, is that what we're talking about ultimately, like side hustles and things that would take you away from your kids?
Yes, exactly. I mean, I think for a lot of folks early on, they're willing to make some of those time sacrifices to, you know, get ahead, to work a little bit harder, burn the midnight oil. You've got the side hustles, the side gigs. So yeah, time.
Yeah. I mean, time is a tough animal, right? There's only 24 hours in a day. And I think just like anything, you need to prioritize. So, I mean, are things going to change when you have kids? Or I guess in this case, if you're talking about families that already have kids, I mean, I think kind of the larger point is that not everyone's FI journey looks the same. And that's how it's going to be. That's how it has to be. That's how it's supposed to be, right? It's just about making your life better. So you could reframe that question actually 20 different ways, right? Like, is FI possible for someone on a lower income? Is FI possible for someone who's 52 and in debt? Is FI possible for someone with 7 kids? So are those paths all going to look very different? Of course they are. But are you going to be in a worse place 5 years from now if you're trying to get on a path to FI than you are today? No, of course not, right? Because this is all about intentionality. And as we call it, it's about, we picked up this phrase, it's the aggregation of marginal gains, right? It's just getting 1% better at all these various aspects of your life. It's not about upending your life and making everyone in your family miserable, you know, your spouse, your kids, and being a miser, right? Like that is not what FI is about to me. I think it's akin, like that type of thing is akin to going on a diet. It's this deprivation mindset. It's this short-termism that I fundamentally disagree with every fiber of my being, honestly, guys. Like to me, FI and just living a better life is about just looking for these little wins. And when you stack 5, 10, 50, 500, 1,000 of them over a decade or two decades, you are going to have a better life. And yeah, I mean, you know, if you want to get into the nitty gritty of kids, I mean, I think for me personally, kids have helped me focus my energy towards FI because I've realized how little you really need to be happy. I know you guys are big board game nuts and actually my kids downstairs and my wife, while we're recording this, are playing Settlers of Catan Asia right now.
Nice.
We had half of a suitcase to Hawaii with board games. So like board games cost $30 each, you know, or whatever, $30, $40 each. And we spend hundreds of hours playing them. So like for us, that's family time. That's teaching skills. Like again, it comes back to just being better, right? So like my 7-year-old can play board games in an adult level at any table in the world, in my estimation, because she plays with us all the time and because we talk strategy and we talk just different ways to go about it, different ways to think. And I think that is a hallmark of FI is just kind of looking at the problem a little bit differently, looking at the world a little bit differently, right? And just trying to get a little bit better. So honestly, guys, I think it's all part and parcel of the same path to FI.
Good thoughts, man. Really, really good thoughts. And you know what? Another hallmark, I would say, of a path to financial independence is using credit cards well to score free travel for you and your family. And we're going to get into some of those tips with Brad. He's got so much expertise there right after the break.
All right, Joel, we're back from the break and we've got Brad Barrett with us. Brad, we're going to launch into talking about some credit cards now. Can you tell us a little bit about your history with credit cards? How did you learn to handle them so wisely?
Yeah, I think this probably came from my mom, I would imagine. So it was ingrained in me very early to pay your cards off on time and in full every single month, that credit card interest will just destroy you. Honestly, I don't remember like an overt lesson, but I know it was brought up multiple times because by the time I was 22 and I was out of college and had my first job, I opened my first credit card and it was never like, oh boy, I've got a $5,000 limit at spending spree time. It was, all right, I'm going to use this for all of my purchases, right? And I think I've always looked at credit cards as a financial tool. Now, clearly, as you guys well know, credit cards can destroy people. And unfortunately, millions of people are mired in debt because of credit cards and because of really ultimately their lack of the right behavior with credit cards, which to me is spending the same as you would with any other method, right? With cash or debit or check or who the heck knows what people do anymore. But, you know, spending the same. So not spending more because you have your credit card and paying it off on time and in full. I think if you can do those things, then credit cards are this wonderful tool. In essence, you don't have to walk around with cash. I went to Hawaii. We went to Scotland and England last year and I didn't have to get a ton of paper currency yet because credit cards work everywhere. There's security with them. It's not giving somebody your debit card where they can essentially liquidate your bank account if something went wrong with it. And, you know, naturally there are some safeguards, of course, but there are a lot more protections when it comes to credit cards. And I mean, I guess also in essence, if you want to look at it this way, you're getting like a roughly 30-day interest-free loan because the interest doesn't start accruing the day that you spend. It starts accruing if you miss your payment or you don't pay on time and in full, right? Like in full each month, if there's still a balance, then the interest kicks in. So, and then obviously, guys, I think you're waiting for me to say this, there's rewards points. And I think that's where I've succeeded wildly. But, you know, I started pretty modestly, I guess. You know, I had, I think a credit card that got me like 1% back, or it might have even been less way back in the day when I first opened them. But, you know, it felt nice at the end of the year to get a check for $80 or $200, right? And it just felt like free money. It felt like winning, frankly. So I think that's kind of my general like history, which is I put everything that I can possibly spend on a credit card on it, and I paid on time and in full every month. And I've done that since I was a 22-year-old kid.
So Brad, you've been doing that for a long time. You've gotten a lot of free travel for essentially just using a credit card for what you would have paid cash or written a check for. So let's get into it. Like, how did you start using credit cards to really get just a ridiculous amount of free travel for you and your family?
Yeah. So I guess we'll go to the inception story. So about, I think it was like 7 years ago, you guys know JD Roth from the blog Get Rich Slowly. And you know, that's like the godfather of the personal finance blogosphere. That was the original blog. And I mean, I looked up to JD. I read every single blog, and he had a post. I forgot. I want to say it was like April of 2011 or 2012 about the British Airways Visa card, which at the time had 100,000-mile bonus. And I'm like, what on earth can I do with British Airways miles? Like, I don't want to fly to England necessarily. Like, I'm looking to take trips closer to home and such. But I really looked up to JD, and he's like, and in this blog post, he said, there is a lot of value here. And people are opening these cards. And instead of getting, like I said, on my old card, 1%, you're getting 100,000 miles. And it just sounded crazy to me. Like, why would the credit card companies do this? But in essence, they're looking for good customers. You can't get these premium travel cards unless you have a significant credit score, well over 700 in most cases. And, you know, it was one of these things where it was like a trust but verify. I did some research and it seemed legit. And it also seemed like I'd have an opportunity to redeem those points actually on American Airlines, which flew from Richmond to New York, which, as I said before, those are basically my two homes. So we opened this one card. I forget what the minimum spending requirement on it then was. It was probably $2,000 in the first 3 months. And of course, I'm paying it off on time and in full, so no interest expense. And I got these 100,000 miles. And guys, I kid you not, we turned them into, and now this deal doesn't exist in quite this manner, but it is still to some degree. I turned it into 11 round trip flights from Richmond to New York.
What?
Yeah, no joke. And
holy mackerel.
Yeah, it was insane. It was my best redemption ever. And from my very first card. So those were four.
Were you feeling like the coolest dude on the face of the planet, like when you did that?
Yeah. Oh my God. I felt amazing because I got like $4,400 worth of value out of these 100,000 miles. And it was easy as can be. And guys, it was fun. It was fun learning about how to redeem these miles. Like, it's a fun game when you earn these miles and you get to spend them, right? And if you're flexible with your travel, I know a lot of people talk about travel rewards points. You've heard the common laments like, oh, they're a scam, these frequent flyer miles, I can never redeem them, all this other nonsense. And I mean, there's some validity to that, I guess, guys, in the sense that there are a finite number of these saver award seats because, frankly, other people want to book them and the airlines aren't giving away every seat. But if you're flexible and you can plan in advance, you can find these saver level seats and you can get amazing, amazing deals. So yeah, I mean, that was my very best deal and from my very first card. So yeah, that's kind of my inception story.
Well, Brad, in order to get those points and to get those miles, you've got to put expenses on that card. And so for you, is there an expense that you think most folks don't think of that you and your wife that you're putting on your cards?
Yeah. So we try to put everything we possibly can. So I think a lot of people miss out on utilities. I know we were able to put our Verizon or Comcast bills on there. I think some utility companies allow you to put like water bills and electric bills and things like that. The big, I guess, kind of caveat here is you never want to pay a fee. I think that's kind of one of my guiding lights for personal finance generally, is if you're getting hit with fees, just in any aspect, this is not limited to credit cards, but there's usually a better way. Now, that said, there are some fees. Like for me, there are some credit card annual fees that I very willingly and happily pay because I get value out of that card that's way more than the annual fee. So, you know, of course, just like anything, it's you have to know yourself and you have to know what you value. So you know, that all said, I think you can put most things in life. I mean, we haven't figured out a way to put our mortgage on. There used to be a way a long time ago, but that's almost impossible. But yeah, I mean, short of that, we put pretty much everything out. So if we go to the grocery store, if we go, you know, my kids are in a swimming program and we just pay it all in one fell swoop and just put it on a credit card. And that's usually enough to hit a minimum spending requirement to get one of these massive signup bonuses. So, you know, if you're smart about it, you can definitely earn a number of these bonuses and really over a course of months and probably, you know, potentially 12 to 18 months, you can put together a trip that is saving you thousands upon thousands of dollars. But I think it comes back again to intentionality and planning. If you're impulsive, if you need that instant gratification, well, you're probably not going to get the best deal. I think you can probably still save some money, but if you're intentional and you can plan, then yeah, I mean, you can travel pretty much anywhere in the world that you want to go.
Yeah, I love what you said about annual fees. I think there are a lot of people that see the headline annual fee for a credit card and they out of hand dismiss it. They say, well, that's too expensive. I'm never going to get the value out of that card for the cost of the annual fee. But when you're talking about the signup bonuses that are available, and when you talk about just some of the underlying offers that credit cards offer alongside of that, so it might not just be the signup bonus, but there might be a multi-hundred-dollar credit that you can get towards travel every year just by signing up for that card. So there are all these other ancillary benefits to having credit cards too, if you use them well. On that note, I wanted to ask you, Brad, do you have any tools or tips for folks who are using credit cards, but they want to make sure they're staying on top of their spending? They want to make sure that if they're going to go this route and try to sign up for credit cards, banking on the fact that they can travel essentially for free if they do it well, how can they stay on top of their spending so that they're not falling into that credit card debt trap every month?
Yeah. I mean, I think this comes back to just behavior, right? And just kind of going in and not impulse buying, like, oh, I need to hit this spending requirement, so let me go buy all this junk that I don't need. I mean, I think people need to be smart just about how they spend their money. Like I don't have any like amazing killer tips other than like there are ways to set up, I think this is kind of after the fact, but you can set up alerts on what spending is coming through. I know like in order to not get into trouble with credit cards generally, I just mentioned like paying it on time and in full, right? And what I do actually is I set up, when I first open up a credit card, I set up an automatic payment to pay the entire balance every single month. That way there's no surprises. I'm not missing something. Because to me, that would be catastrophic, right? Like to pay a late penalty, like how galling would that be to pay a late penalty and interest on top of it just because I wasn't organized. So, I mean, I think, I think maybe to your question, like being organized is a crucial, crucial aspect of using credit cards properly. It's understanding when these due dates are, right? Like for me, I keep extra money in my checking account because I never want to be scrambling for cash. I know that's not optimal, you know, because I could invest that money clearly and it could be doing better for me. But the peace of mind for me personally of having that extra cushion in the checking account to not have to worry if my credit card bill is $500 extra that month, right? It's just there and I don't have to stress. So I think that's a huge aspect of how I set up my entire financial life, not just credit cards, is try to set it up so it's on autopilot, but so that I'm never stressing about the cash flow of, oh, am I going to get paid on Thursday, but I have this bill coming out on Wednesday, what am I going to do, right? Like that is a really, really stressful existence to me. And I think just following the path to FI, like even if you're not anywhere near financial independence, right? Like it's not just a binary zero or one, like financially independent or not. It's every step along the way, you accrue some power in your corner, right? So if you were paycheck to paycheck and now you have $5,000 in the bank, your life is dramatically better. Think about when you have 10,000 or 20,000, like your life is better still. And then it can cause you to make decisions like, you know, I talked about jokingly with the CrossFit thing, or in this case, like you just set your credit card up for auto pay and you never have to worry about missing it.
Yeah, Brad, it makes me think of what you mentioned earlier about having like that 30-day interest-free loan. I think for a lot of folks, that really can be an issue, right? Because it might be 30 days, it might even be 60, right? If you make a purchase at the beginning of the billing cycle, the statement comes due. And then if that statement isn't due for another 30 days, man, it's close to 60 days before you actually feel that pain, right? Like of that money leaving your account. And like you said, I think staying organized is so clutch. We're going to talk about some additional credit card benefits. Specifically, we're going to launch more into the travel benefits. But first, let's take a quick break.
All right, we're back. We're talking with Brad Barrett, co-host of the Choose FI podcast. And Brad, we were talking about credit card travel rewards, and we heard about your first credit card sign up. But what are some of the best trips that you've taken thanks to credit card travel rewards since that first sweet bonus that you got?
Oh, yeah, there have been a lot. Yeah, we've been really fortunate. I think the biggest one, or the one that sticks to my mind the most, is our trip to our family trip to Disney World. So I have two young daughters, and they, you know, desperately wanted to go to Disney World, and it's very expensive. I mean, I don't know if you guys have priced it out yet, but it's like $4,000 to $5,000.
Not yet.
Oh yeah, it's coming. Don't worry. So, but I just couldn't stomach spending that money, and I did a lot of research and figured out I could use rewards points to pay for the flights, the on-site Disney hotel, and for Disney park tickets. So we did that for our family. I think instead of it being a little over 4,000, I think we paid 150 out of pocket, which was just amazing. And
wow.
Actually, right? Like, how cool is that? And my parents joined us, my wife's parents joined us, and we had this amazing like three generation trip to Disney World. And each of the three families spent a little over $100 out of pocket.
Well, Brad, do you have any specific cards for Disney in particular? Are there any cards that kind of, I don't know, maybe cater their benefits towards a trip like Disney?
Yeah. So good question. I think the hardest aspect to figure out was the park tickets. So a card like the Capital One Venture, where you basically purchase travel on your credit card. You're just paying for it like normal, just with your credit card. And if it codes as a travel expense, then you can use your Capital One miles to offset that expense. So I actually did a ton of research and found this website. It's an official Disney authorized ticket seller. It's called Undercover Tourist. Because if you buy from Disney, evidently it doesn't work. It doesn't code as travel. But if you buy it from Undercover Tourist, it's such a weird quirk. It does count as travel. So Capital One, Barclay Card Arrival Plus, I don't think is currently being offered, but that card comes and goes. So if that is ever available in the future, that might be an option. Capital One has a Spark Miles card as well that operates a very similar fashion to the Venture card. And you know, each spouse or significant other, each adult basically, let's say, can open a card in their name and they can each earn the bonus. So you know, my wife and I were each able to open up a Capital One Venture card. And, you know, depending on what the bonus was at the time, I think we got 50,000 miles at the time, plus the points we spent, we earned for the spending. So I think we got like $1,120 in free park tickets just from those two credit cards. So, I mean, that was awesome. Southwest has a huge presence in Orlando, and Southwest is actually the easiest of all of the miles to use because they don't limit it based on those saver rewards that I was talking about before. It's just like a simple function of the cash price. So Southwest miles are really easy to come by with a bunch of the different Southwest credit cards and also Chase Ultimate Rewards points, which are actually my number one points. Those transfer to become Southwest miles. So those are pretty easy to come by. And then the hotel, I used Starwood points at that time, but they've since been purchased by Marriott. So you can use the Marriott points. And again, they're a Chase Ultimate Rewards transfer partner, though that's not optimal. And there are many Marriott cards. You can use those points to book the Disney Swan and Dolphin hotels, which are like these real luxury properties right there next to Epcot. So yeah, I mean, there really are pretty easy ways to do that, to get to Disney World.
Nice, Brad. Wow, that's so much information just about how to get to Disney for cheap. We'll have to put a lot of that in our show notes on our website.
Cool. No, that would be awesome. And actually, my original website, richmondsavers.com, we actually have an article specifically on how to get to Disney World. So that's step by step. We also offer like this little like challenge, like coaching program actually, that's free. So yeah, I mean, if anybody's interested in that, that is available.
Awesome. Yeah, we'll definitely link to that as well. And I love the tip too, that both spouses can essentially apply for the card as well and get the bonus. I wanted to ask you, for people that aren't terribly familiar with credit card travel rewards, can these points go to waste? Is there sort of a time, is there like a use it or lose it? How do these points work? Where do they sit? And then how hard is it to actually redeem the points?
Okay, if you thought a lot of information was coming on that last one, give me a couple minutes here. I'm going to be as clear as I possibly can, but there is a lot here. So there are three broad categories of travel rewards points, okay? And it is very, very hard to lose these points if you're organized and if you're aware, okay? People who are listening to this and are excited about it, like as long as you're organized, it is very hard to lose the points, but it is possible. So I think that's important to note. So the first broad category are the transferable points. So like I mentioned before, Chase Ultimate Rewards points, right? And Amex has their membership rewards points. Citi has their thank you points. So these points reside in the credit card account. Okay. So if you had those points and for some reason you closed the card and you still had the points, they would be gone. All right. Because they are associated with that credit card account. So that is like a catastrophic mistake to make, is to close one of those bank cards when you have points. Now, in the case of like Chase Ultimate Rewards, you can redeem them a number of ways, but the most optimal is to transfer them, like I said, to their transfer partners. They have a bunch of airline and hotel transfer partners, including like Hyatt and Southwest, United and British Airways. Those are four of my favorites, but I think they have at least a dozen. It might be 13 now.
Wow.
Yeah. So, I mean, you have a ton of flexibility just getting those Ultimate Rewards points. And Ultimate Rewards come from a card like the Chase Sapphire Preferred, Chase Sapphire Reserve. They have an Inc. Business Preferred card. So there are a lot of ways to earn those points. And like I said, if you had the points, they reside in your account, in your bank account. You could lose them theoretically. But once you transfer them, let's say I sent them to Southwest and I wanted to book that flight to Orlando, they are Southwest miles at that point. They are no longer related to Chase. All right. So I can't transfer them back to Chase. It's a one-way thing. They are Southwest miles from there forward. Okay. So whatever you do with your credit card account thereafter is irrelevant to those Southwest miles that are sitting in your Southwest Rapid Rewards account. All right. So, but that said, there are expiration policies of each of the airlines and hotels. So it's very, very, very easy to extend the expiration. In most cases, it's any tiny little bit of activity. You know, the easiest thing is book some travel, right? So if you had 100,000 airline miles and you booked one round trip for 25,000 miles, well, that would extend the expiration clock and reset it on the remaining 75,000 miles, actually, because that's account activity. So it is really easy. You can Google just how to extend United Airlines miles, how to extend Delta miles, and you will find a laundry list of things. So super, super easy. But again, you have to be organized and you have to be aware. So that kind of ties into, very obviously, into my second category, which are the co-branded credit cards. So like the Delta Amex or the United Airlines Chase card or whatever it may be, right? Any airline or hotel credit card, those points, in very general terms, at the end of each credit card cycle, those points get zipped over to your airline or hotel rewards account. And again, those reside in your airline account and they're not related to the credit card. So you still can have them expire, but it's based on the expiration policy of that airline or hotel. And again, it is pretty easy to extend the expiration. So I think, you know, just looking at those two broad categories, that's how you look at it conceptually. And it's pretty hard to lose them. But the third category is what's known as like the fixed value cards. And that's actually the list that I gave you before with Capital One Venture and their Spark Miles card and the Arrival Plus when that existed. Those points are bank points. They can't be transferred. I guess Capital One Miles, sorry, I guess I have to be technical here. Capital One Miles now technically can transfer, but I still think of them conceptually as these bank points. And if you don't use those points and you happen to close the card at some point in the future, you do lose them. So you need a qualifying travel expense to offset with those points. So pretty easy, right? Like you have a travel card, you have all this free travel, you may as well travel, right? So like it should be pretty easy to not lose these miles and to get significant value out of it. So I know that was a lot, but yeah, that's kind of the three broad categories and how to think about potentially losing them, which is pretty hard.
So are you keeping like a spreadsheet, Brad, or how are you kind of keeping track of the points that you've got going on, making sure you don't lose them, and then actually making sure you redeem them in the most beneficial way possible?
Yeah. So I do have a spreadsheet. I keep a spreadsheet of my credit cards and my award programs and roughly how many miles I have. So the credit card, it's just when I opened it, how much money I have to spend in a certain amount of time, that kind of stuff, just so I'm aware. And it's just a quick glance. It doesn't take a lot of time. If this was laborious, guys, I'm looking for simplicity in my life. Like I'm not looking for something that's laborious. This is simple as long as you're organized from the outset. So I actually use a software called awardwallet.com, and they have a free account that you can sign up for. You connect all your frequent flyer and airline accounts, and they actually send you an email notification when you are facing an expiration, you know, it's 6 months in the future. So,
oh, that's cool.
Right. It's awesome. And that's awardwallet.com. And yeah, I mean, it's really pretty easy to extend the expiration, especially because like I have a ton of those Chase Ultimate Rewards points. So if I know I haven't used my United miles, I can send actually the lowest amount, which is 1,000 Chase Ultimate Rewards points to my United Mileage Plus account, and that extends the expiration. So like I'm constantly aware of it, both with Award Wallet, but also I use the taskless program Todoist, and I actually put in like just little notes, even like 18 months into the future. Like if you haven't used United Miles, check expiration or something like that, or send Ultimate Rewards. It becomes very easy, but I know I've said this 5 times already. I sound like a moron, but like as long as you're organized from the outset, it's so easy.
So what it sounds like as well is that you're wanting to get those miles out of the banks. It seems like you want to detach those from the card just in case, you know, you might end up closing that card. So is there any downside to having those points or those miles, you know, sort of stuck within that bank?
I mean, there really actually isn't. The funny thing is, while I think you get the most value from the redemption, so when you actually redeem the miles, I think you get the most value when you do transfer points like Chase Ultimate Rewards out of Chase. So there are redemption options through Chase. You can book through their travel portal, okay? And it's just like, I forget which search engine they use, but it's like Expedia or Travelocity or something. And you're basically just, they take the cash price. If you have the Chase Sapphire Preferred, for instance, you get like 1.25 cents per point. They just do the math and you just use your points, right? But that doesn't give you any upside. Whereas when you send them to United, you might be able to get some amazing like international round trip that would cost you, I don't know, $2,000 for 80,000 miles, right? So you're getting like, what is that? 2.5 cents per point. So that's double the value as if you had just bought it through the Chase travel portal. So I think there's a lot more upside to transferring to one of the travel partners, but then you do lose some flexibility, right? Like you need to find those award flights or nights. So there's like this spectrum here, right? Like as you give up a little bit of flexibility, you can get potentially more value. So what I counsel actually is to keep your points in your bank credit card account. So in this case, we're talking about Ultimate Rewards. I keep them with Ultimate Rewards until the absolute last minute that I know for sure, like 100% sure that I'm going to book a flight or a night. And then I send those points in. I think most of their transfer partners, the transfer is either instant or like within an hour or so. So we're talking like—
That's pretty quick.
Yeah, it's amazing. Like I've literally booked, I found a Hyatt night. I quickly jumped into my Chase account, sent over 8,000 points, logged out of my Hyatt, logged back in, the points were there, and I booked the night. And it took under 2 minutes. So you preserve that flexibility because, well, you know what? What if I wanted to book a Marriott night? Or what if I wanted to book a Southwest flight? So you always have more flexibility keeping it with the bank until that last minute for sure.
So Brad, you mentioned some of the travel restrictions, right? And how they're, you know, they're not that bad as long as you have some flexibility when it comes to travel. You've got 2 daughters, right? Yeah. Do you find that harder to line up that travel with the dates that are available? Do you find it harder to take advantage of these travel benefits now that you have kids?
Yeah, I mean, I think it is incrementally harder, but it's not catastrophically harder. What I say to anybody is any little bit of flexibility you can build into your travel rewards plans will help you. So if you told me, like, I needed to go somewhere, and I hate to say this, like pedestrian, like, you know, in the Caribbean, like I'm going to Jamaica for a wedding, you know, in
Why are you hating on Jamaica, Brad? Yeah,
no, I love Jamaica, but this one particular weekend, right? And like, that doesn't sound like an ultra, ultra like exotic trip, but like that is really hard with rewards points because it's very specific, right? You're flying from one airport to another on those exact dates, and you probably have very little flexibility with your hotel. Now, if you told me, hey guys, I want to go to Europe for 2 weeks next fall, and I want to see four different cities, you could do that in a heartbeat. That would be simple. And that is like a life-changing trip, you know, like that would be something you talk about for years. Because you have the flexibility, because you don't care if you go to Rome first, then Paris, then Bruges, then wherever, right? Like you could do it backwards. You could throw in Barcelona. You could do whatever you wanted. That makes it so much easier because there's flexibility. So I think when you're talking about having kids, right? Like obviously there are very specific times, like the winter holidays, right? Like those are extraordinarily difficult times to travel with rewards points. It just is. So you have to kind of line up your expectations. I think this is like a key to success in life is line up your expectations with reality, right? It's if you're expecting to be able to use your miles and find saver level tickets over Thanksgiving or around Christmas and New Year's, you're out of your mind, right? Like it's just, it's not going to happen. It is simply not going to happen. So, but if you said, hey, I want to take one or two family vacations over the summer, sometime over the 3 months my kids have off, and I have some flexibility with my job, and you know, maybe I can take a week off in July and a week off in May, or you know, whatever it may be, right? Like you can definitely do that. Any little bit of flexible. So you're flexible on your destination, right? If you're locked in, like I said, on that one weekend in Jamaica, that's going to be hard. But if you say, hey, I want to go to the Caribbean, that's going to be easier still. If you say, I want to go someplace warm, that's going to be easier still, right? Like, and you know what, guys? Like, even if you can't be flexible, okay? So even in that situation of that Jamaica trip that I'm, you know, making up here, you can use points like the Capital One Venture that we talked about before. Those are simple. You open the card, you use that card to pay for that travel. Just normal purchase, right? No matter where you book it, Travelocity from the web, the United website or whatever it may be. And then after the fact, when you earn your miles, you go back and you apply your miles against that expense. So while that's not a world changing, hey, I'm getting 4 cents per point in value off this. No, but you're getting the value of getting this significant free travel from a card and saying, all right, look, I don't have flexibility, but I'm still going to do the best I can. So I think that's a way to approach this mentally is like, there's always ways to save money with travel rewards. You just have to be honest with yourself of what's going to make the most sense. If you are someone who is locked in, then maybe a card like the Venture card makes more sense, or maybe getting that Sapphire Preferred that I talked about and not transferring, just booking through their rewards engine. Maybe that makes more sense. So you have options.
Yeah, what I love about that is it just sounds so scrappy. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. It's like, well, I can't be flexible, but I'm at least going to use this one card. And yeah, I just love that approach, Brad.
Take whatever potential method I can take leave that on the table, right? Exactly. Don't take it off. And I wanted to say too, I was thinking of Arrested Development right there. There's always money in the banana stand. It's like there's always money in the travel credit card, you know, like rewards. There is. So
stash to be had.
Yeah, no doubt. Brad, this has been a really fun conversation, man. We really appreciate you coming on and sharing not only your wisdom when it comes to travel credit card rewards, but also your really deep thoughts on achieving financial independence. Yeah, I just really appreciate the way your brain works and the way you think about that. And I know that our listeners will enjoy it as well. So thank you so much for taking the time to hang out with us today, man. We really appreciate it.
Nice. Well, yeah, thanks again for having me on, guys. I really appreciate it. It was a lot of fun.
And then, Brad, where can folks find you on the web?
Well, yeah, I mean, the easiest place is definitely ChooseFI. So obviously, if you're listening to this podcast, just search for ChooseFI And we'd highly recommend starting with episode 100. If you really like that, go back to the beginning or pick up and pick and choose episodes. But yeah, we'd love to have you listen. And actually, if you're interested in travel rewards, we have a free travel rewards course that we set up through Chooseify. You just go to chooseify.com/travel. And yeah, I think it's just a free email course, and we would love to give you more information.
Awesome. That's great, Brad. So thanks so much for joining us on the show today. We really appreciate it.
Yeah. Thanks so much, guys. I really appreciate it. This was a fun, fun conversation, and yeah, just love being here.
All right, Matt, that was a great conversation with our friend Brad and his podcast, Choose FI. Really, it truly is a great show. They, like us, put out 2 episodes a week. They have great conversations with people pursuing financial independence in these really impressive ways. So yeah, it's great stuff. So I wanted to ask you, Matt, what was your big takeaway from this conversation with Brad?
Yeah, Joel. So my big takeaway is going to be kind of broad, but it's when Brad mentioned how credit cards are a tool. And like any tool, you can use it for good or you could use it poorly and it could end up harming you. I think this is back when we were talking about cash versus using plastic and how, you know, sometimes you might be tempted to spend more on a credit card. But the fact is, like, cash is basically in the past and credit cards are so much more convenient. They offer all those protections. And we've just covered a host of different ways that you can have some serious benefits from your credit cards. And man, really, this takeaway is applicable to how we teach our children about money, too. I think a lot of folks are really concerned about allowing their kids have credit cards. But again, that's the most relevant tool that we have when it comes to making purchases. And what better way to teach our kids about money than to allow them to experiment, use the tools, you know, while we still have some say in their lives, to be able to correct them, to point them in the right direction, to scoop them up when they really mess up. I just love how Brad was able to reframe the conversation of credit cards as this sort of neutral object, and it's not necessarily something that's evil as it's often portrayed.
Yeah, use that tool well. Don't use it poorly. If you use it well, there's a lot of potential good benefits in it for you.
Yeah, for sure. What was your big takeaway, man?
Yeah, I think mine was flexibility. And I think Brad kind of talked about it in 2 ways. He talked about it at the beginning of the episode when he was mentioning the flexibility on a path to financial independence. It doesn't all have to look the same. Some people might get there by driving cars that were made 16 years ago, and other people might get there by moving to a new location, a cheaper place to live. Other people get there by riding their bikes more often. There are just different ways to approach financial independence, and I love that. Also, flexibility when it comes to booking travel, and in particular with these credit card rewards points, the more flexible you can be, the more money you can save. And when you're flexible, the more cheap travel you can actually take over the course of your life. And when you do it that way, the more cheap travel you can actually take as well, which I think is really cool. So flexibility was a huge part of this conversation with Brad. Man, he taught me some things I didn't even know. So I appreciate his depth of knowledge on this subject.
Nice, Joel. Man, I love that. So I'm going to take it back to our beer. We are having a Scamper IPA, and this is by Upcountry Brewing Company. And this was donated to the show by our friend Stacy. So thanks so much.
Yeah, Stacy, good friend of the show, and she and her husband, our good friend Matt, they took a trip up to North Carolina, and they stayed in this Scamper van, which Matt was telling me about their trip, and he said they parked slightly off kilter, so the mattress was basically slipping the whole night while they were sleeping in the van. It sounds like they had a good trip, though, sleeping in the van in the woods. It's kind of a cool way to take a cheap vacation.
So what is a Scamper van? Is that just like a name brand kind of camper van?
I think so.
Okay.
I think it's this company that
gotcha.
Yeah, has these camper vans and then rents them out to you for your fun North Carolina mountain vacation.
So it's just the name brand version. So Kleenex.
Yeah.
Got it.
And now they've got their own beer. So yeah, this beer was really fun. It was a pine heavy IPA, kind of one of those old school super piney IPAs with just that tiny citrus bite. It was a nice beer to drink on the show tonight while we were talking with Brad. And big thanks to our friends Matt and Stacy for getting this one for us while they were in North Carolina.
Yeah, it was really tasty, man. It had that amber color to it. Again, taking me back to some of those old school IPAs. It's totally got a hippie vibe with the can art that's on there. It kind of has the flower power color palette going on. It totally takes me back to living in North Carolina, hanging out with my granola crunchy friends up there. So, and it's been a number of years since you and I have been up to Asheville. We're going to have to get up there and visit the number of amazing breweries that are up there soon.
Yeah, that part of North Carolina has so many good breweries. All right, Matt, that's going to do it for this episode. If you want the show notes for this episode, you can find them on our website at howtomoney.com. And also, if you're interested in credit card rewards and also finding some of Matt and I's favorite cards with some of the best sign-up bonuses, well, you can find those at howtomoney.com/creditcards.
And if you've been digging our show, man, we would love for you to leave us a review over on Apple Podcasts. Anytime a solid review is left up there, it just really helps us to spread the word. And that helps folks who haven't even found the show yet. So thank you.
Yeah, man. And I've already gotten pretty much every family member I know to leave a review. So yeah, I mean, I'm barking up the tree now. I got to now start contacting unknown family members. And that just gets awkward. I kid. All right, buddy. That's going to do it for this show. Until next time, best friends out.
Best friends out.